Good. No, no. When it turns 6 o'clock, no, Kara, I love seeing you. You're fantastic.
No, apparently it is.
Like Groundhog Day, he emerges at 6.
Let's see. Six, five. I still got 5:59 over here.
I have 6.
I heard the bells.
Up, oh, just turned. Okay. Ready?
Thank you.
Ready to roll?
Ready to roll.
Are we on? Oh, sorry. Hi, good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, August 5th, 2019 meeting of the Ulster County Legislature's Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, Planning, and Transit Committee. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And we'll take a moment of silence afterwards for Legislator Jim Maloney. This is the first meeting of our committee since former chair of this committee, Jim Maloney, passed. So, anyway, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, thank you, everyone. Mary, will you please call the roll?
Sure. Legislator Archer.
Here.
Legislator DeLon.
Here.
Legislator Litz.
Here.
Legislator Mayo.
Here.
Legislator Maloney Joseph.
Here.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Present.
Chairman Waltman.
Here. I also would like to take a moment here to welcome Legislator Herb Litz to the committee. And
thank you.
I think we can benefit very much from his input and look forward to serving with him on this committee. Thank you for agreeing to serve.
Thank you.
The minutes of last month's meeting were circulated. Has everybody had a chance to review them, and are there any changes proposed?
I'll move it.
Any second?
Second.
All in favor of approving the minutes? Any opposed?
I'll abstain.
Okay. The first resolution tonight is resolution that we'll go right into resolutions. Resolution 179 is the first resolution. I'll entertain a motion to for discussion of resolution 179.
For discussion.
This is the chamber.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Sure. Yeah, let's we had later, talked about
Maloney.
This about a year and a half ago. I think there's a lot of good organizations out there in the private sector that if legislators or elected officials think they should be members of, they should pay for it themselves. It's slightly offensive that the county taxpayer would pay for this. You have the Asopus Business Alliance. You can go on and name them. Should village trustees, should town board members and supervisors. We can go on and on about elected officials that might find it beneficial to network in an organization like the Chamber of Commerce. I just think if you find it appropriate to involve yourself in that you should pay for it yourself. It's good government. It's only a couple of thousand dollars, but the more of these things you nip in the bud, the better your government is, and the more you're working for the people and keeping things prioritized, I think, the way they should be. I don't think any taxpayer, and we have 180 to 200,000 of them, I don't think any of them would say, yeah, pay for the chamber memberships out of your own, out of our hard-earned tax dollars.
Any other discussion? Legislator Rodriguez?
Yeah, no, I mean, as I recollect, I think the former comptroller was on the board of the Ulster County Chamber, and I think at one point, I think the dues, I think, were actually being paid, I think, from his department.
There were three or four, I think there were three or four different offices or departments that from time to time would pay with their own discretion, and the legislative office was one of them that as soon as, you know, I remember talking to legislators like Dean Fabiano that had no idea that he was a member of the chamber as soon as he got elected to the legislature. It used to be more expensive, it used to be even more offensive, now it's a little less offensive, but it's still offensive nonetheless. You know, I think we'll be talking about the Yonville Millions and soon and where that money's been spent. It seems it's been spent in certain areas, people that were on the EDA, and I think, you know, you just have to clean it up and put a stop sign on some of these roads.
Legislator Nolan, please.
Yeah, I think this is just being part of business friendly.
See you there.
Participating in the chamber as being part of being business friendly, and I think encouraging legislators to be accessible to the public is a good thing. I take the point about other chambers, and if they have a complaint and would like us to join them as well, I would favor our joining the other chambers rather than stopping our membership in this. Seems to me that it is a small way to support what is mostly, was actually given back in food at the event. There are a lot of legislators who take travel money for coming to and from legislative meetings, and we pay that without even thinking about it. This, to me, is something where we go and where it's outreach to potential constituents. So I have never thought that there was a problem with this, and don't see a reason why we restrict this.
Okay, I'll go one more time back to Leslie Miller.
Sure. I just take her points as kind of points to my point. There's 13 last count chambers in Ulster County. So that's what I'm talking about, stopping that pathway of, yeah, it's okay, it's a good way to get to the people. Look, I've been to Chamber of Practice. They're local insiders. You're not talking to Joe Blow on the street at the Chamber of Breakfast. And like I said, there's 13 amongst other organizations that we can come up with. The Osopus Business Alliance, there's a Rondout Business Alliance. We can come up with 20 to 25. We can come up with elected officials in every town, committees in every town and county. And where do you stop? And how do you pick winners and losers? How do you decide the private organization that you're going to allow memberships to be paid for? And I just think it's Pandora's box, and I think that Retort was kind of an example of it. If there's more chamber membership, more chambers out there that want us to pay for memberships, let's do it. That's exactly my point.
All right. I'm going to call for a vote. All those in favor of Resolution 179?
Aye.
So we have three. Hector, you're a yes on it?
Yeah, yes.
That's all opposed. Resolution is defeated 4-3. Okay, Resolution 345, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Ride Systems LLC, UCAD.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Director Hargrove is here from UCAD, and I invite her to talk to the committee regarding to this resolution.
Yeah, the Ride Share system is the automatic stop announcement system that will make sure we're in compliance now with the ADA instead of the driver having to make sure he does all the stop announcements. It's automatic, just like you see on the train and the other buses. Next stop is or Kingston Plaza. Arriving at Kingston Plaza, what we also can do with this automatic stop announcement system is say, this bus also services the rail trail, or this bus also services whatever, or the Ulster County Fair is from this time to this time. So we can do other announcements with the automatic stop announcement system. It is, the amount is $265,000. It's all paid for by 2017 MEP funds, all local shares paid for.
Okay. If I may, I just question, is this GPS prompted?
It's GPS.
So if a bus needs to be, in the city of Kingston, if there's a train and the bus needs to reroute because of a train delay or a train stoppage at the crossing, that the GPS will adjust
dispatch
the announcement?
Dispatch would key in.
I see.
But it would adjust for the time frame and everything.
And for instance, in the city of Kingston, while the bus route doesn't go exactly past the library, a stop near on Broadway, near the library, could also announce that the Kingston City Library is okay.
Access to the library, town hall,
gotcha.
Kingston High School, whatever. Yeah.
That's good. Legislator Rodriguez, you had a question?
Actually, just really mostly a quick one. So this is going to be for all buses throughout the county, basically, in terms of like whether or not they're then able to sort of then get on like a separate bus, for example, if they need to go on to a either like a loop bus or a link bus. Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of. I was having a moment. All right. So it will in fact coordinate itself also with all of our existing buses as well as all the
right. And it
mass
and
transit.
It will say transfers to we can make it that it will say
like MTA has for
yep.
any of its trains.
Yep.
All right. If that's the case, then can we also have Diane Kampner, since she's the voice of our system in the county, actually record all of the.
We can.
For consistency's sake, I'm just saying. She was a long time employee, so.
They're going to automatically do it for us, all in the price. It's already programmed and ready to go.
It should be Diana.
Carol, if I may, is this for all fixed route, published routes?
This is for all fixed route services. The only vehicle that will not have it is the medical van because there's no use for it in the medical van. The paratransit vehicles will have it because once they're all paratransit, we'll have to go on a fixed route service.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So any other discussion on this resolution? In that case, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. It carries 7-0. Resolution 346, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Doron Precision Systems Incorporated. You can. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, you did, Doron.
Okay.
This is for the
Can I get a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. Thanks, open for discussion.
All right. This is for the bus simulator, the driving bus simulator. It will go up into our training room, also fully paid for by state funds for the modernization enhancement program. No local share will be going towards this. It is quite the machine. It will have three screens, the actual seat, the actual mirrors. Anybody who would like to drive for UCAT, you feel free to come and learn how to drive on the bus. But I think it's going to be a very good for retraining or pulling drivers in to see where their skill set is. It will be set up basically like a bus. It will be placed up in our training room.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I'm going to vote for this, but as you can see, I'm putting my head to my forehead because it's just at $165,000 for a trainer. I mean, yes, I get that it's 100% state funded, but we're all state taxpayers here as well as federal taxpayers. So, I don't like the idea of being wasteful, but it's just walk me through.
What are we here?
Oh, stop. So, The issue, I guess I just want to understand, is this really, what are we sort of getting for our money? I can kind of see in Schedule A here in terms of the base system and some of the options, so I guess we're getting all those options, and I guess how is this different than, say...
With emotion. I think what's very important, as far as having a bus simulator, also we can have other agencies, driving agencies, come and utilize it also. But I think what's important, not just for the simulator itself, but drivers, New York State is becoming very tough as far as keeping your CDLs. At the same time, health issues, personal issues interfere sometimes with the way people drive. I can't be out there following people on buses all the time. But if you get a complaint about somebody that you're not quite sure, you could bring them in on the simulator. Is their peripheral vision safe? Are they using their mirrors correctly? Are they having issues? Is there a health issue that's preventing them from actually seeing, you know, somebody crossing or whatever? There's more to just the driving simulator than just seeing if they can drive. You know, the other thing too is when you bring somebody in to interview, we can't take them for a road test first. We have to first take them for their drug and alcohol, right, to make sure they pass that before we can even put them in the county bus to drive. This way, at least when the applicant comes in, we can put them in the simulator to see if they have the skill. Now, we're looking to train people also, but you have to have the skill to train. So I think that's another reason to invest in the bus simulator, I think, is a positive thing to do.
Legislator.
Do you get an insurance discount by having the simulator?
It's a good question. into it. I was hoping that it would be up and running by training day in the middle of September because it would be such a good day for
new
all
drivers.
Yeah.
Right. But I was just curious as to, does the simulator help us with that?
I'll call the question.
Probably does. I would think so.
Although, what would be the expected useful life of this equipment?
About 15 years.
15 years.
I think, if anything, it would be, you know, updating the software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with what we made sure when we went through, and Doron is a well-known company. There was a couple that weren't as well-known. They didn't follow through with a lot of the things. We researched it. We've been researching it for quite a few years. And with New York State being, you know, we have now the new system safety plans that have to be put into place, right? That's next year. They're all ready to go in the asset management plans. And you have to show, number one, that you're using a certain percentage of your funding for a type of training and for a type of security, and so which is 1%. So with all the money that we do use, 1% is, you know, we're fulfilling that requirement. So, you know, I think it's the software. Just make sure you maintain the software as you go. But, you know, driving is driving. You know, so there's not much software that really is going to change. And it was important with the simulator. You didn't want one that wasn't realistic. You know, this is going to have the three screens. So you have, I mean, to have just this one and you're not really seeing what's coming, that's not realistic for a driver to measure the skill. You know, it's important that the drivers that are out there are skilled drivers. We have a good record in Ulster County, and we only had that one bad hit last year. But other than that, you know, it's a proud thing to say that, you know, we haven't had any major hits. No one's really been hurt except for that one snowstorm. So.
So I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, resolution number, you want my glasses, I need to enlarge this. Resolution number 347, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Giona P. Ambrett Incorporated, DBA at Newcastle Communications Information Services.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any discussion, Dennis? Oh,
this ready? Isn't done.
We got Alan.
Oh, sorry, Alan, I didn't see you there. I apologize.
So what this does, this amendment, it's really the final step in moving the contract in Newcastle under one contract and co-terming it. I think one of it, this actually moves the managed services, the 24/7 tech support, and the software assurance under a new contract. It also extends for an additional year. This is so that we can, part of it is so that we can decrease the amendment, the amount of the amendment from Newcastle. And so essentially what it does is collapses all these, the contracts for Newcastle into one contract and one, and it co-terms it, making, simplifying it for simplifying the relationship.
Legislator Archer?
Just a question. Under Schedule A, you crossed out upgrades and patchwork. So if you're combining the contract, I would assume elements of this schedule were part of the original. Is that not required anymore?
Correct.
So you're not, there's no upgrades?
Well, some of it has to do with upgraded systems, or systems that we got upgraded servers, upgraded software, upgraded devices. So some of the maintenance is obviated due to some of the changes.
Okay.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you. So, all right, so by collapsing all these contracts together, I mean, what are we actually saying?
So one of the things that happens, where some of these contracts, they overlap in their the timing, so it's harder to track. It's been difficult to track. And understanding, one of the objectives here is that we're trying to there's a couple of things at play here. So, where we have an issue with our voice system, we have Newcastle with all these moving parts, all these different services that came under the umbrella of Newcastle. Plus, we have, they also assist us with our the actual there's a network component to this, which is Windstream. There's a touch points between Windstream and Newcastle. We're looking to review our essentially what we're trying to at some point in the not too distant future, we have to really think about our VoIP system, right? So part of it is chasing down these loose ends that have struggled to kind of stay on top of, and the services that we get from Windstream that Newcastle helps support us. It's a bit of a challenge. So one of the things we're trying to do, at least from a management perspective, is to simplify the relationship between Ulster County and Newcastle, so that as we we're looking at new SIP trunk providers, that Newcastle can either support. But again, the main objective of this is to really simplify our relationship with this vendor, with these multiple contracts that are hard to chase down, and streamline the maintenance of this relationship.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you. So just to continue on, because I mean, I can see quote unquote the quote unquote Newcastle courtesy discounts here. I mean, you know, how much, I guess, has the equipment that they've already sort of provided us depreciated, I guess, at this point? And are we being, you know?
A lot of the servers that we're running on are now virtualized, so that is less of an issue. So that some of the older equipment has sort of been decommissioned. The actual physical hardware has been decommissioned.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Vicky told me to ask this question. There's no recording devices part of this, right?
There's always with any VoIP system, there's always recording capabilities, but there's no
recording
devices.
It's all been disabled.
Right.
It's been disabled going back multiple years.
Sure.
I don't think it was ever enabled on the new phones. How much of this is maintenance and support, Alan? How much of this amendment?
I'm trying to pull up my okay. Doctor, but let me check here. So, I don't know that off the top of my head, but
okay.
I can get that to you.
Any other discussion? I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 7-0. Okay, resolution number 348, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, National Business Equipment, LLC, Information Services.
I'll move it.
Motion
second.
Hector and second by Mary. Yeah. Let's say Mary. Yeah. Hector?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just actually through the chair to the deputy county executive, you know, this is, I guess, part of the process by which we actually ended up sort of getting rid of, moving two employees as well as equipment that we already sort of owned, and now I see another amendment here for 361. Now, I'm assuming this is for all the copiers.
This is
right,
all of the copiers. This is the all-in print cost.
But
so this is.
I was going to say this is literally everything. But part of the, and those copiers were supposed to quote unquote take some of the burden from what we were actually having being printed downstairs.
Yeah. So what we had in the past was the burden from being printed at central services.
I said some of it was
small burden. They had a couple of large machines. They got this is the lease price for all of the copiers in the entire county. In the past, what we had had before we had went to national was piecemeal contracts, basically 20 different. We had a RICO contract, we had various different vendors, and they were all kind of at different terms. So I think 5 years ago, or about 6 years ago, we had done an RFP for print optimization to try to figure out reduce the amount of copiers and printers in the county, which we did through this, but also just have it as an all-in cost, which for this year, this extension is $361,000.
So, okay, but you know, what I want to kind of get at and be able to understand is that I can appreciate going to one vendor as opposed to having 20 different vendors for each division or even multiple vendors potentially from the same floor if there was different copiers or different,
right.
You know, depending upon the unit. But did we in fact, though, by going in this direction, and again, yes, I realize that printing services downstairs, it was fairly specific and you know, and it was, you know, I don't know its efficiency, but did we actually in fact save money by going in this direction for both all the contracts basically being under one like major contract, but also on top of that by us eliminating out that
yes.
print service?
So that's, I think there's two pieces. We have a color page contract that was done through RFP where we outsourced our printing for large printing jobs.
Yeah.
That is part of this equation when you're talking about saving money from doing it from a four-person kind of central services where we had, you know, two people that all they did throughout the entire year was copying, and then there was another 1.5 FTE that they'd kind of mail but also helped out with copying, right? So we have that. This includes all of our toner. This includes everything but paper.
Okay.
So maintenance, service, support, the actual copiers themselves, and the toner is all included in this price.
Any other discussion? We'll call a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 7-0. Okay, resolution number 349, execution of a contract amendment causing the aggregate amendment to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Tyler Technologies Incorporated, Information Services.
Move. Second.
Any discussion?
It's a $4,500 amendment. It's gone over, you know, we've amended for more than $50,000. That's why it's here. This is basically migrating our financial system onto our own. I mean,
correct. So we need to engage Tyler to assist in the installation of the financial services software and all of its dependent pieces on servers, virtual servers that we have deployed on premise. The goal is to move off of the VC3 environment and host it exclusively in-house using our redundant network. We have failover capabilities between the law enforcement center and information services, so we have a redundant high-speed backup network that we can take advantage of. We also, and given the fact that we also have new system administrators and other techs on hand, we have the skills to really manage this environment. We did a proof of concept of failing over our public safety system when it went live from the law enforcement center to information services and back. We did it without a hiccup, so we know we can do this with the financial system as well. So the goal is to get Tyler Tech and their folks to help install the software, migrate the data from DC3 to the on-premise solution, and prepare us for a go-live. And the goal is hopefully to get it in by the end of the year so that we can eliminate the VC3 costs, which are about $65,000 a year.
Okay. And that's what you're paying Tyler to support, what you can now do with us with this change.
This particular amount of money is for them to come in, install the software on our systems, and migrate the data from VC3 to the new environment. And once we do that and we go live with that, we can eliminate the cost of DC3 and eliminate the cost for the dedicated circuit between information services and South Carolina.
And the savings is $60,000?
The savings is going to be about $75,000 to $80,000 a year.
And it's also a lot. He just said we have a dedicated line to South Carolina. Obviously, if you know the weather patterns, we worry about disruption through hurricanes, power outages, etc. It's a lot safer to have this redundancy up here in Ulster County.
Right, and we have really built out a very robust backup and failover capabilities, meaning that the data on our servers gets backed up every half hour. We can fail over to any point in time on any of the systems that we have in-house at the earliest a half hour pass. So we can do some pretty sophisticated backup and redeployment of services with the system that we have in place. We also have the capability, the way that we've architected the network between the law enforcement center and information services, that we can fail over the machines, like the virtual machines, from one environment to the next within a matter of minutes. and could be up and running in one environment and the next. We don't have that capability with VC3. We've never even tested the failover in VC3. We've never tested the backup and restores on VC3. We know we can do it on site because we've done it with the public safety system.
Okay. Any further discussion? I'll call a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And Carol, I apologize. I would have put this with the block and put it together with the other resolution for you, Kat. Resolution number 358, authorizing a grant application to the New York State Department of Transportation to apply, accept, and administer a 2019 Accelerated Transit Capital Grant Funding and authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute any required applications or agreements to accept funding. Department of Public Transportation, you can.
Move. Second.
Any discussion?
Did Dennis write this title or what?
Accelerated Transit Capital has been around for a while.
I think this was another one of Saja's.
She's taking it very Dennis.
She wrote the last long one last month.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
This is to cover the local share of the 5 buses that we put resolutions in before. So this is the local share. That's what it will be used for.
That was a much shorter title.
ATC.
Any other discussion? I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 359, appointing alternate member to the Ulster County Planning Board, Village of New Paltz.
Second.
Any discussion? I'll call it for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution 360, authorizing the Ulster County Executive to... I bring this closer. Authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute a contract with the New York State Housing Trust Fund Corporation, represented by the Office of Community Renewal, for federal funding for the implementation of a Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, and amending the 2019 Ulster County Budget Department of Planning. Can I get a motion?
So, this is a homeowner's grant. It provides gap financing. The amount of CDBG funding is $590,000. It will leverage approximately $3 million of bank mortgages. We anticipate that we'll be able to do 20 units and probably in a neighborhood of between 30 and 35 individuals in terms of homeowners. The reason it's signed by the county executive versus the chair of the legislature is that's a requirement of the grant source, that it be signed by the chief elected official as the county executive.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, per our policy, there will be no administrative fee charged by the county, correct?
That's correct. The grant administration in the current contract is $15,000. We will go for a budget amendment after the contract is signed, and that we've already had approval for our other budget amendment, so we'll do a budget amendment afterwards on that. There will be some grant administration funding that goes to RUPCO, and that's because
they're actually doing programs. So.
Yep,
I know. Good.
Any other discussion? I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nothing. So that concludes our resolutions, and we'll move on to old business.
We probably eat it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
That wasn't a track.
Your IT security policy.
You almost caught me, but I knew you just.
Okay, Al, back in the room. Good catch there, Leslie Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We reached out to Eisner Amper to ask them for a price quote. Mary, do we have? Ask them for price quotes to evaluate the policy, the IT policy that we provided a couple months ago. And we have quotes available. Mary,
you're in the OneDrive, I thought.
It's in the... Okay, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah, Mary, we have printed out the quote.
I do have it.
Can I sit around after? I'll get that to everybody. And anyway, Lynn, I'll let legislator Archer, I'll ask her to. She and I had a discussion related to this today. She brought up some good points, and so I'm going to ask legislator Archer to kick off this discussion, if you will.
As you'll see, so nobody's seeing this? Okay. It's a little vague on what we're going to get, so I just thought everybody should take a look at it. For example, in the course of our conversation, we were really clear that elements of what they viewed as being not in our policy has been edited and updated by Jose prior to his leaving, and Alan, I think you were part of that as well. We asked them to take a look, make sure all the things they recommended are in the policy, but to go through, edit, give us feedback, and also ensure we have a good matrix in here of, you know, a protocol of who has to be, who gets to authorize access to certain servers. Particularly, we have 4 or 5 elected officials, and you know, we need to notify them if we're going into their server. So we're asking them to please review the policy, make sure the things they recommended are evidence. If there's something in there that they feel there's a best practice that we might want to consider to identify. It's really not laid out here, so we were talking about going back to them and being very explicit about what we talked about to be included. And so I'm thinking we need to go back and say we want redlined edits. We want to ensure that if you identify a policy or an improvement that could be made, that you give us the actual verbiage for the policy so we're not rewriting it. The whole point of giving it to them is they're the experts.
And the source, if they've actually got it.
And the source,
For example, if they've got something from Illinois or something like that,
right.
They actually give us a copy of the actual, not just the verbiage from that section in Illinois, but the entire policy from that one.
I mean, this... From an administrative standpoint,
yes.
I understand that they are the experts that you used for the investigation. They are forensic accountants, basically, and...
They have a whole technology team.
I understand they have a technology team, but I don't know that I put that... Anything that they make changes with our policy, I would like to... I would like to see the red line so that we have an opportunity to
respond
have the IS director respond and...
Yes.
We can meet and discuss whether we believe that their best practices are best practices, and whether we want to move forward.
Yeah.
We base a lot of our security guidelines on standards, like NIST standards and CERTs and things that are actually national and international security guidelines. So if their recommendations are in line with that, then I'd be fine with that.
Right, and they have a team that specializes in all of that, and that's who's going to be looking at this. And they were also the ones that identified what gaps were in the original policy you showed them. And so this is really just to make sure everything that they recommended is captured. If there are things in there that they think we should be looking at that are different or could be better or should be considered, we're asking them to provide us that feedback and that information. So, it is a give and take, and the whole process here is, so we're all, moving forward with a policy that everybody is comfortable with and puts in all the checks and balances we need, and that gives the audit function the ability to go in and then audit that these things are being done. So I think it's... moving in the right direction. My only concern when I looked at their proposal was it wasn't as specific as our conversation, so we want to send a note back. And if there's anything else you think should be in here that we're missing, we're open to.
I haven't seen the scope, so if maybe Alan could look at it and see if there's something added. I'll also say that every kind of month that I think we need to get it right, absolutely, but we're also...
I want to move on it.
We have a 1999
right.
security policy in place right now, and I don't remember when this first got proposed, but I mean...
Was it?
Well, it got proposed during the investigation, so.
Right, we held off during, we didn't want to put it forward
right.
during the investigation.
Right.
We put it forward right afterwards, but obviously, I mean, it was something that Joe and his team had been working on prior to the events of last summer, which I won't go into recounting
now.
We
don't need to go there.
So one of the things that I'd like to have some visibility on this when it comes back is that, the policy needs to be reasonably flexible to adapt as technology changes and other things that come along without having to rewrite the policy, right? And if you're very specific about things and you can't break that specificity, then you've got to have to rewrite the policy again. So one of the reasons why we went with like the CERT and the NIST standards is that they're flexible. They give us the capabilities to say, here's the policy. It can be it's static to the point where it gives you the ability to move and make changes, make recommendations without having to change the policy. But if they come back and say with something very specific that we're like, okay, now we're shoehorned into this policy that we have to now rewrite because the technology has changed or processes have changed or procedures and security change, like that you know might
well, as technology changed, I would assume you're going to be updating.
Technology changes so fast that you want to update the policy again next year.
Just to cut and save us any more back and forth, I don't foresee there being a problem when we get what they give us. You guys say, look, we agree on this. We could. If this is what we think about this. I think we'll end up talking about it. I don't think we're going to go, well, this is what... I keep wanting to call Eisner and Malecki, but Eisner Amper says, and this is what we're doing. They did this in another state.
This is a final offer, take it or leave it.
I think we'll work with you, so I don't think we need to go on
our own.
Okay.
I get what you're saying. And what's going to change with new technology is pretty much going to be your procedures and how you're still implementing the overarching...
Right.
goal of what the policy is trying to accomplish.
It doesn't constrain us from adapting like that.
All right. Any new business, anyway?
Might be old business as well. We touched upon this in the audit committee. This is on our recommendation for year after year running. So it's as in the audit committee, I think, actually most of the audit committee's here. Just to maybe get a rundown on where you're at on the disaster recovery plan, which some of what we were talking about before with the backups might bleed into that. But ultimately, what the audit committee is trying to do, what I'm trying to do, is remove some of these recommendations that are there year after year from our end of year audit. And one of them is this, what we just talked about, and the other one is the disaster recovery plan. So I was wondering where you were at. If you could just give us a quick spiel. Where you're at on that, if you've come any...
Well, the disaster recovery plan in its previous state has been updated to have updated contact information, updated points of contact, other changes to applications that are no longer either in service or that have been or have been moved to another service or another piece of software. What we're working on is the outstanding bits of information are things like the ability to, or the documentation of the ability for us to restore backups from what is the procedure that we do to restore backups. It's actually very simple, but they've been able to document it in such a way that it actually provides some useful information to, you know, to someone who's actually exercising the disaster recovery plan is what we're working on. The other thing that we're working to sort of help flesh out the disaster recovery plan is, as I mentioned, in the deployment of the financial system on site, there's this one piece of the equation that we're investigating. And so we could fail back and forth between the law enforcement center and information services, but what we don't have yet is a solution that in case they both go down, right? So what we have now is we've contacted a couple of vendors, Microsoft being one of them, on using the technology that we have now, the automation and the services that we have now running on premise that can interface with cloud services so we can back up and restore small bits of critical infrastructure to the cloud. So that we're putting together proof of concept for that, or we want to test a couple of services in-house on how they can fail over to the cloud. So the biggest challenge to this is documenting it in such a way that when you go to execute it. So the disaster recovery plan is useless if it's just words.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have steps to say, this is what you do, this is the steps you take, this is the time it takes, this is step one, step two, step three. And so we're still working on those details. So a lot of the skeletal pieces of it have been updated. The real details, the execution steps are still being fleshed out.
Leslie Rodriguez?
And I don't want to belabor this because this already, by the way, thank you for all this. It's been very, very informative. But even in terms of what's actually going on the cloud, I mean, basically at this point, I don't need to get into the nitty-gritty details, but what are we actually sort of putting out there? And then number two, what's the security of that?
Right.
So that's
a very important point to make. I mean, you need to step through it carefully. You need to make sure that you're not exposing.
Do you guys actually have a certain level of criteria as to what information is basically going?
So here's part of the challenge of disaster recovery is that from a technology perspective, I can make all the recommendations in the world.
Sure.
Eventually, it comes down to, from my perspective, it comes down to leadership deciding of all the systems that we have out there. If it's a total outage,
mm-hmm.
What comes up first?
Yeah.
What do you need right away?
Yeah.
Because every department's going to say, oh, we need this thing.
Yeah.
But no, let's think about it from a business perspective.
Yeah.
Like, what needs to come up first? What needs to come up second? So one of the reasons why we moved our email systems to Office 365 is that it's in the cloud. So you can access it anywhere. It's secure. If they adhere to a number of different national and international security standards. And so it's been vetted from that point of view from a GovCloud and other compliance agencies that we feel comfortable with. So that gets our email systems off into the cloud. So that in case our network goes down, you can get to it from your phone, or you can get to it from other ways. So to your point, though, we have to step through it carefully. There's certain services that you have to make sure that the data that's in the system is not. If for some reason it gets exposed, is there any risk? Like, what is the risk of exposing this data? Some of the data might be, you might decide that if it's a total catastrophe, that data, the risk of that data being out there is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to have this small bit of data out there while we recover the systems. But that's a determination that I don't think I can make. That I can tell you how to do it, but then the determination comes down from leadership to say, well, yes, we're okay with putting that data out there for 1 hour, 10 hours, 2 days, a week. What does it look like, right?
If I could just jump in real quick, I just want to make sure that you received the IT disaster recovery plan from Joe back in March.
We had a firm do up in 2012, and then it was. And then I had both of them.
The draft plan, but that I think was submitted around the same time as the security.
It looked like, I have them printed out. They're in Vaughn's office, both of them.
Yeah.
It looks very similar to what we just got given from the firm that we had. I think we paid $38,000 in 2012 to have a basic thing given, a kind of a template given to us. And it didn't look like much was done there. I'll tell you this, what we just got from you is what I've been kind of looking for.
So Alan is IT disaster recovery. Steve Peterson has an overall role working with Alan and prior to Alan, Joe, on a disaster recovery and redundancy or resiliency plan for the county. So it may be helpful to talk to Steve. That's a good point to make.
So when you think of disaster recovery, that document contains everything from hard documents, paper, and so there is a point where it splits off. When IT disaster recovery is a very specific part of disaster recovery plan.
This is the whole county.
Right.
But
from the IT perspective, it has been updated. I could certainly share it with you.
Yeah, but I was actually getting into the whole trying to come up with the plan. Have you talked to other counties or taken a look at what they've come up with or what they have? They don't put that online necessarily either because we've tried to get a feel for what they've done, and that's been kind of hard as well.
Just for your knowledge, when I was a disaster recovery lead for Google Packet Enterprise for the division I was in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, again, part of it is facilities management. That's completely outside the scope of IT. There's document management outside. outside of IT. So the budget, but it's all coordinated. It has to start from the top, and you have to kind of, you know, and it has to be a very dynamic thing. You can't. It's not something that just you just create a disaster recovery plan and you put it on the shelf. You have to exercise. You have to update it. You have to have your people
training,
right? And you have to. It has to be led from a point that all the dependent pieces are exercising their piece, right? And I can exercise the IT piece, but that's only one part of a master disaster recovery plan.
And I can appreciate, and honestly, again, I want to thank you. I want to echo what Joe just said, you know, and thank you because this has actually been very informative for me. You know, look, you know, every organization has to weigh these sort of decisions. You know, when I was at Golden Hill, we lost internet, you know, a couple of times, which means we would actually literally have, there was one computer in which you actually would have to go and actually print up the entirety of the house's schedule. And it means all the medications, everything, it was a HIPAA sort of, you know, treasure trove that you had to sort of make sure that no one had access to it, because all of a sudden you could basically go and get whatever information on any patient. I can only imagine by sheer volume, we're then talking about the County of Ulster, and it could be anything from, you know, anybody who's currently at, you know, at the law enforcement facility, maybe incarcerated, maybe not, whatever, and or anybody who's on social services. I mean, there's all sorts of data protection issues that, you know, I realize this may seem mundane or odd, but it is sort of just important for us just to know in these sort of situations as to how we're handling that. That's all. So,
yeah.
Cool.
Any other, I'll add one piece of new business. I want to welcome Mr. John Milligan, our new deputy county executive. He joined us. I think this is his first meeting of our committee that he's been at. So I just want to welcome him, and I'm glad to see him, and look forward to working with him.
Nice.
Anything else? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, second.
Second. All in favor? Aye.
Thank you.
Her, my friend.